Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to Pure Hustle Podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. We do have a request though before we get started. If you have found our content to be entertaining or helpful, would you consider leaving us a review on iTunes? Those 5-star reviews really help to make sure that our content gets out there and that our show continues to grow.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Pure Hustle Podcast. I'm Mike.
And this is Rolando, and we are on episode 367, a themed episode.
Yeah, 367 episodes in, and this episode is going to be titled something to the effect of things that we don't believe anymore in regards to our reselling. And it kind of goes to show that our focus on our podcast is to always be real and to be relevant. So we've changed, reselling has changed, and so we kind of want to just look back at some of the things maybe we've talked about before, things we've kind of thought in the past and ways we've adapted, and maybe ways that even Orlando and I are different on some things. So we're going to be talking about things that maybe we've talked about in the podcast in the past. So some of you have been listening since day one and you've grown with us. So you're right there. Some of you might have binged. Like I can imagine if you've been binging episodes from the beginning, stuff in episode like 67 might not be as relevant as stuff in episode 367. Our opinions might have changed. The reselling landscape may have changed. And some stuff is going to be tried and true and won't change at all. So today we're going to be talking about those things and kind of just looking through some of the things you have here, Orlando. I think I might have some disagreements with you. So we will see how parse these out.
You know, but I appreciate that because, again, we've always said we're not gurus. We're not experts. I just observe things and I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that anymore. Now, there is a part of me that does feel a responsibility since, you know, I've been reselling for 10 years, since we have a podcast, since thousands of people listen to the podcast, to kind of like take apart some of the things that are said out there that aren't true. And I'll never say which ones I 100% believe are not true. There's a few. But I find that right now there's a lot of misinformation in reselling. I think a lot of it is coming through from people that are just trying to get clicks, people that are trying to get a following on social media. A lot of YouTubers back in the day when they first started, like back in reselling in 2014, 2015, it was mainly like documenting. You didn't have people that were speaking on authority saying, if you want to, you know, be successful at eBay, this is what you need to do. That happened once the Amazon gurus jumped on board on YouTube. And so kind of want to discuss some of these. And I, you know, it's good for you to challenge me on some of these. And I know you agree on some of these. So what about this one? So this is one that gets pushed all the time. And I do see why it gets pushed. I don't find it to be true. It's the, if you list every day, it's going to bring sales. I find that there was a time when there was a correlation or there was, I don't know, a causation, whatever it is. And things changed, I would say, in 2023, especially beginning of 2023, where something happened where it didn't matter how often you listed. A lot of other factors began to play a role. But there was a time where if you were consistently listing, you were going to have sales. Now, I still try to list every day, but I'm not as super concerned because I've had the times where I've listed 4 or 5 days in a row and I've had sales, but my sales didn't go up. It's not like, you know, hey, I listed 30 items and 30 items magically sold the next day, right? There is no proper equation. Are you on board with this one?
I mean, again, it's going to depend on how we qualify it, because if you're talking about simply the algorithm aspect as far as does that activity alone increase your visibility on the eBay platform? Is your items going to be up higher if you're consistently listing? That may or may not be the case. It's hard to tell for sure. Like you said, there's other things that may play a bigger factor. What I do think, though, is eBay is a numbers game. I mean, any kind of reselling is a numbers game. It would be like saying, hey, if Walmart stocks every day, they're going to sell items. Well, it's like, yeah, it's true. Or if they get new items on their shelf consistently, they're going to eventually, like if you're not listing things, you're not going to have more sales. And so maybe the everyday thing isn't necessarily right. But if you do list every day and you can happen to be listing items people are looking for, you're absolutely going to get more sales because it's simply a numbers game. If you've got the items people are looking for, they're going up, as opposed to if those items aren't being listed, those will never sell. So just a pure numbers game aspect of it. Now, again, like anything, and I've said this before, like, okay, it's not just hard work. The work has to be meaningful. It has to be the right kind of work. You can't just move rocks around and expect, like, well, I work really hard, I should be really successful. So that it doesn't, it matters what you list. You can't simply list random garbage and think, well, I list every day, therefore my sales have to be going up. And I don't think we've ever believed that. But the other side of it is, I do think that if you could potentially be listing high quality items on a regular basis, just on a pure numbers aspect, you are going to get more sales than if you don't list anything, because you're not going to have as many items in your store that people are looking for.
You know, you bring about an interesting point. I do wonder if it's better for you to spend more time sourcing quality items than just trying to find a bunch of like mediocre, like things that do sell, like the sell-through rate isn't terrible, but you're just listing all the time. Like, I do wonder, right? Because there's the one extreme. Remember, you know, Craigslist Hunter brought up the idea of, there was a watch guy when we did an interview way back, and he only sells like 8 watches a month. And that's good enough for him, right? Because they're high dollar value, and he spends more time trying to come across the right watches than he spends listing. And so, yeah, I see what you're saying. I will agree. If you list junk, you're not going to get more sales. It's not like, you know, you can just find, I'm going to buy a pack of pencils and list 24 pencils individually, and so I have 24 listings up. Like, that's not going to do it. But I do think there is a mentality out there that even if I'm listing junk, I'm going to get more sales because I'm triggering the algorithm. And I don't believe that to be true at all.
Yeah. I mean, specifically when you talk about the algorithm part, I think you're right there that that's not going to be what does the trick, because eventually you're going to do more harm to your store than good. Now, it may help the algorithm. If you list junk for a couple of weeks, eBay might be like, oh, great. Look, we've got activity on this store. We're going to push the store. I don't think that it's debatable at this point that if you don't do anything for your store for a while versus you start taking some offers, you have a little bit more activity, that you're going to get some more sales. So I think that part we understand. But if you're listing junk in order to be that activity, then eventually your store's sell-through rate is going to tank, and then you're going to do more harm than good. So maybe you've taken one step forward, but you've taken 4 steps back in your store's placement on the algorithm. So I can't imagine that's a very popular belief, that people just think like, well, I'm just going to make 1,000 random stupid listings and that's going to do it for me.
I don't think people do that, but I think people begin to believe, and I've seen it, where like you just got to list every day, right? So they're not listing high value stuff. They're listing stuff that maybe brings in $3 net. And I'm guilty of it too. Don't get me wrong. I had those moments, especially during, you know, that era we went through when we weren't allowed to leave our homes. I remember I was just pretty much listing anything I could, right? Because sales were coming through. But sales were coming through not because I was listing every day. It's because people weren't out. People weren't out and about shopping. And so they wanted to buy something. And, you know, those nice checks came through and people were buying. So what about this? You've probably said this, and I've said this many times. You just need the right buyer, right? You find something at a garage sale or a thrift store, and it's high value, but the sell-through isn't great. But you're like, if I get the right buyer, I'm going to make some good money. Do you think that's a poor strategy now?
I mean, I don't think that's a strategy. I think that's just, I don't know how you make a strategy out of that. If your strategy you're trying to make is, I can list whatever, knowing that eventually the right buyer is going to come around, all of the other factors are going to play into effect. How many items are listed? Is your listing competitive? But it's true. Like, if I have a really rare item, I might have a rare, I don't know, stone that was, you know, used in some movie that's, I don't know, whatever the stupid thing is that like is like super rare. And there's like 6 people in the whole world who even know what this thing is. So it's very true that I could list it at a good price, but that right buyer has to find it. Right. So I do think that's true. You have to have the right buyer, but I think that only works with the items that are unique enough that it's not the everyday average person. So I don't think it's I still think you need to have the right buyer. That being said, you need to be priced correctly for that buyer. You need to be be competitive with all the other people selling those items for that buyer. Because it's not just like you can list something and say, well, I'm 30% more expensive than everybody else with this item, but that's fine because I'll wait for the buyer who's willing to spend 30% more. Like that obviously doesn't work. But I'm curious as to why you think this is a bad, you need the right buyer.
Because I think this is the old school listen and forget it, right? This idea that, hey, it's okay if I have a massive store. And we'll talk about this later, but you know, it used to be like long tail items didn't matter, right? We even did a short podcast, you know, the difference between fast nickel and slow dime. I would say a slow dime will be the end of you. That's where I'm at right now. Like, when I mean slow dime, I mean anything that takes more than 6 months to sell.
But see, it's interesting. And I think you're probably right in the sense that I've never thought it was a great idea to have stuff listed that long. Towards the beginning of the podcast, you were totally fine with having something up for 4, 5, 6 years. But nothing's changed as far as that goes. Like if you list something today and you're like, well, 4, 5, 6 years, it's going to sell and I'm going to get this price. There's no difference between whether you listed that in 2015 or 2020 or 2023. If it still takes 6 years to sell and you still get the price you're looking for, I don't know.
I think there's a lot of consequences.
So you're forecasting. Okay, so the consequences you're saying would be then like the impact on your store, like a negative.
Correct.
Okay, so that's a fair way of putting it. So I mean, I guess I understand what you're saying as far as, I think a better way of putting this is we're just moving a little bit more towards a faster nickel as opposed to a slow dime mentality.
Yeah, I think eBay doesn't want to share the server space for items that people are like, oh, I'll list and I'll get the right buyer and I don't care how long it takes. Yeah. I mean, they actually have said, they're very clear, even at the eBay ads event that was just recent, they said if you have a lot of slow moving inventory, it will slow your store down. It'll weigh it down. They even were saying this back in, I think it was 2019. It was an eBay open. It was an eBay whatever get together in LA, I remember.
So what you're saying is all of those times in previous podcasts where I told you, Orlando, it's probably a bad idea to have something that you're wasting that much time and storage space for years to make an extra $30, and you were adamant, like, here's my I told you so moment. I get it finally.
Yes. Well, but it's not. But a lot has changed, though. That's the thing.
It has a lot changed, or has just our knowledge of the way systems have
worked? No. I think eBay has changed dramatically. The algorithm was not the beast back then that it is now. It just wasn't. At the same time, there was promoted listings wasn't that big of a deal back then, right? I mean, when promoted listings started around 2019, and that was only standard. Right? And then, you know, and no one really caught on until I forget whenever promoted listings gate happened. Remember that when everybody on YouTube was freaking out? We even did an emergency episode. And since then, it's definitely changed. It's very clear that eBay wants you to spend money on promoted ads. And so the reality is if you have a long tail item, like you could promote it, but eBay has said anything over 180 days is stale. And I've even heard them say 90. I don't know why there's the difference in what different eBay reps said, but that discussion wasn't around. No one in 2018, 2019, no one had said anything about there being stale listings, at least to my knowledge. That language didn't come about until that time. And so that has changed. Where before, it didn't matter. You could list it. You could wait. It didn't matter how long. But now, I definitely think it is detrimental to your store. I believe it may hurt you in the algorithm. I believe it'll hurt you in search. I mean, I just think of some items that may have been listed, you know, 4 years ago. I do wonder how many pages people have to scroll through to get to that item. You know, especially if it's an item, let's say it's a Rain Spooner shirt, okay? And it's not anything that's like distinct. It's not a San Francisco Giants Rain Spooner or something that's a special collaboration. It's just a Rain Spooner Hawaiian shirt. That may take so long. Tommy Bahama shirts, I forget what the number is, but I believe every year it's less than 1,000 sell on eBay. So if you source Tommy Bahama, you may be waiting a long time. And again, I know somebody's going to say, well, I just sold one last week. Yes, you might have. And you may have been one of those 300. But you just got to be careful with that. Are you agreeing?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Hey, before we move on, though, one way to definitely see your profit and loss and if you're moving inventory for good money is by using My Reseller Genie. I just use My Reseller Genie. to help me complete my taxes for 2022, and it was a breeze. It was really simple. I just gave it to my tax person, and I explained everything there, and it didn't take long, and we were good to go. So if you're still worried about your taxes, you know what's interesting, Mike? Being at a tax office and hearing people talking about, I'm here to file my tax for 2019 and 2020. Like stuff like that. Just I know somebody right now that they didn't file for like 3 years.
Wow.
And then they got a refund. It's just crazy to me. So I got to tell you, like it's just like whenever you think you're behind, there's other people that are behind you. And don't be one of those people by using my reseller Genie. Go to our link below. You get that free 15% discount for the first month. And it's going to be a tool you're definitely going to love. It's easy to use. There's a lot going on there. One of the new things that they added is consignment, and which I'm excited about because I've been doing a little bit of consignment here and there. And I may have another opportunity around the corner. And so it helps me keep my bookkeeping. So, again, go to the link below. I use our code PUREHUSTLE for 15% off the first month.
Very good.
Very good. All right, what about this? Free shipping is not optional.
You're saying you've changed your mind on this?
Oh, 100%.
So you think you could still... You think now you don't have to offer free shipping?
I'm not saying I don't think you have to offer free shipping.
No. Because the...
Okay.
The way I'm reading this, we've been saying for a while that you need to offer free shipping. You need to, that needs to be, it's important to offer free shipping. So if you're saying you've changed your mind on it, now you're saying charge shipping.
Yes.
So you can charge
shipping. Unless you're somehow able to maintain good profit by doing free shipping. For me, I can't. And the reason being is I sell a lot of hard goods now. It applied when I did clothing. When I did clothing, which I still do, I would say half of my store is probably clothing right now. But that's just, it's just something I don't source anymore. I don't sell anymore. And whatever I do sell, it's because, you know, I either had a huge score or something, but I don't actively look for clothing. And it's a little easier. But I can't do free shipping. I'm looking right now. I have this this Christmas tree thing that probably costs $20 to ship. Maybe 30 if it's to the East Coast. And the price is around 100 I can sell it for. And I picked it up for $10. But if I offered free shipping, I'm already going to lose potentially half of my profit while we get eaten up in shipping. Because shipping costs have gone way up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, shipping costs have gone up. So have prices on everything else. And I think if you use the exceptions, like if we're talking freight, you're talking big items. Of course, adding shipping on there is pretty normal. I say I've always kind of had the mindset of you need to have a total price that's competitive. So if I'm selling something for $10 with $5 shipping and somebody else is selling it for $15 with free shipping, the total price is the same. Like the fees are going to come out the same. Everything's going to come out the same. My gross is going to be the same. So just having that free shipping is oftentimes enough. Like I think enough people... Now, it's true. Somebody might say like, oh, this one's only $10, so I'll buy the one that's $10 with $5 shipping. But I think, at least from my experience, so many people are used to free shipping and seeing that. And it's just like one of those things, like just like having something listed for $14.99 as opposed to $15. Like it's that little, those little things that are able to get people. And the free shipping, you know, you get, if you're top rated and you're offering free shipping and you're offering, like you get different notifications, different badges on your things. And when we talk about trying to be higher up in the search, when we're talking about the algorithm, I think that's one of those things that might be useful. And again, that's one of those reasons why you might want to look at something like Terapeak to see how competitive you are. Like it'll tell you what the average shipping cost is, how many of the listings have free shipping. And so, yeah, if you're listing something that's huge, it makes sense to maybe have calculated shipping, especially because it could be going to different places. But typically a shirt's going to be a shirt, it's going to be a shirt, or a pair of shoes is going to be a pair of shoes. So you can roughly say like, this is going to cost me $6 a ship. This is going to cost me $3 a ship, and just add that into your price. And as long as your total price is competitive, that free shipping notification or that little badge on your item may be enough to get that extra buyer. So I don't know if I've changed on this, especially because people are still used to it with things like Amazon. That being said, people may be willing to pay more shipping if they're getting a better deal than Amazon. But think about what you talked about last week. when you talk about people who are fencing their items on eBay and people are offloading items on eBay that are stolen, you're never going to be able to compete with some people. You're never going to be able to compete with some items if they're stolen and they have a zero cost on that item. So that's why I feel like some items are up there and it's like, there's no way they're making money on this, or maybe they were able to buy in a big enough bulk. But for things like shirts, media, shoes, the average thing that you know what it's going to cost, I say add that into the price and get the free shipping, because it's just that psychological aspect.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's to a certain point. I find that, I guess it depends on what you're selling. You're right. I myself, I haven't seen a dip in sales as a result of shipping. Now, are sales slower now? Of course they are. But that's been, you know, an ongoing theme. But my sales, I remember when I went 50% off, you know, back in February, I had a ton of sales. And I still get a lot of sales. And the reason I've changed is because the shipping prices have gotten so crazy. You know, when there was first class mail, you can usually ship stuff out for $2 to $3. Now, USPS Ground Advantage, even if it's less than a pound, sometimes you may be paying like $6-$7, which is almost priority shipping. So to me, it's just not worth it to me. Now, if eBay came out and said very clearly again that free shipping is the way to go, I would switch over again just because it's being pushed. But I'm not sure. Now, you do need to check on Terapeak if you're really interested, or just check the comps. How many people are selling stuff with free shipping and how many aren't? Because that'll determine whether you should too. Because if there's an item and everybody has shipped it out for free and you are somehow the only one not shipping for free, it may take you a little bit longer to sell that item. So you got to be aware of that. All right, what about this one? This was one of our first episodes. You need to build an eBay pipeline, meaning you have to have tons of items in your store to be successful.
That's not what a pipeline means, though.
That's what I meant.
So, well, then that just means you want a huge inventory. A pipeline, right, though, means it's a pipeline is a start to end. So it means you've got a way to source. You've got a way to process
in the reselling sourcing. In the reselling community, that's not what that means.
I don't know, maybe in the reselling community,
it goes all the way back to the days of scavenger life. The idea that the larger the inventory, the more sales you'll get.
Well, okay. So, okay. Then we're talking about two different things. So
correct.
If you're just saying like, you just need to have a huge store, I still think it's a numbers game. Like if you have a huge store of the things people are looking for, like, of course, like if you've got junk, if you've got things people aren't buying, then it doesn't matter if you've got 10 items in your store or 1,000 items in your store. You're still actually probably going to end up selling more with 1,000 junk items in your store than 10 junk items, because it's still a numbers game. That being said, though, if you have a way of saying like, hey, I've got 10 collectibles versus I've got 100 collectibles and they're all sought after that, like at a high level, you're always going to do better with more items. I can't imagine anybody who wants to have a smaller store. Now, you might want to, you know, even if you're going fast nickel, same thing. I would see the pipeline as you're trying to get as much good inventory into your store as you can so you can get it listed so you can get it to the buyers. Like I don't think that there's anything wrong with a pipeline.
So my question to you is, if somebody has 1,000 items in their store and they're only selling, let's say, 10 a day, is that a problem?
Is it not necessarily? I mean, how much gross are they making? I mean, yeah, they probably have too many items in their store. If they've got 1,000 items, they're selling. No, I think if you got 1,000 items, you're selling 10 a day consistently. 1%. And if you're replacing those 10 items and you consistently have 1,000 items in your store and you're consistently selling 10, I think you're doing great. If those 10 items you're selling is meeting that number you want.
Yeah. See, I'm the guy that doesn't have so I have the large inventory, and I will tell you, I do not think it's benefiting me. I don't, I have, you know, over 3,000 items, and I have consistent sales every day and they come through, and some days I have more sales than others. But if I could do everything all over again, and I have strongly thought about just going through and like purging all the slow selling stuff, I wonder if I would be rewarded better. And let us know in the comments, because I know there are people that have 500 items and they make as much money as people that have 10,000 items, 15,000 items. It makes me really sad right now because I see a lot of people like older school or people have been selling for a while that I think it was a thing back in the day that the larger the inventory, the more consistent sales you have. And there are people right now that are killing it with 500 items. And there are people that have 10,000 items and can't even get 10 sales a day.
I mean, maybe there's some changes, like you said, with the algorithm. So I'm not completely discarding that, but I feel like that's always the case. Like, it's the same thing. Like, you walk through a swap meet, right? I can walk by a booth in a swap meet and somebody literally has 10 times the number of items as the booth next to it. And it's just all junk on the floor. And then the next booth has like 20 items in it, but they're items that people are flocking to because they're good. Like, it's always the case in every situation that if you've got the good items, if you've got the best quality items, you're going to be doing better for sure. And that store, like if you've got, for instance, if you're the store that's got 500 items and you're crushing it, like you're making six figures and you never have more than 500 items in your store, perfect. But if you found a way to increase the pipeline and actually say, like, I could go from having the same quality 500 items to now I have 1,000 items of the same caliber, then you'll be making even more money. Like that will hold true if the quality, it's a quality and quantity have to go together.
I don't think that math works though.
Like it does work.
No, I disagree.
Okay,
I,
so you're telling me, so if I've got the top 10 most sought after Pokemon cards,
you wouldn't have 1,000 items. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
But the point I'm trying to say though, I mean, sure you could. Some of the biggest sellers on eBay, like the biggest sellers are like car parts store sellers and things like that. They probably have thousands of items in their store and they're moving those items, right? So it's not that they don't have, it's not like like the smaller your inventory necessarily, the better. You still have to have the right inventory.
That is true. But I will say there is a problem right now in the sense that there's this, you know, I always cringe when people message me and like, oh, you know, I wish I had 3,000 items like you, or I wish I had 5,000 items. And I tell people, no, you don't. You don't, because in the end, that tells me I had a lot of bad pickups. I have a lot of items that I was waiting for the right buyer at a lot of long tail items. And to me, I feel like it's weighing my store down. I don't think it's benefiting me. I believe that was true years ago. I don't think that's true anymore.
Okay. So, I mean, again, if we're going back to the idea of items not moving, so you've got those long tail items in your store that aren't moving.
Yeah. Long tail to me is like no sale.
Sure. So yeah, if you've got long tail items, they're not moving, it could be weighing your store down. So then, yeah, I definitely think that's an indicator that you've made poor choices. But you could also have 3,000 items in your store and not really have any long tail items. Everything with all 3,000 of those items are going to sell in 6 months. And if you've got a decent pipeline, then you'll have been able to replenish those and you'll always be able to stay at about that level. So you can still be moving high qualities or quantities of items if the quality is high. So I think you're right. I think that the point to be made is that the number alone isn't everything. Just like we say, like a 90-day total isn't everything. So the total number of items you have listed in your store isn't necessarily a great indicator of whether or not you have a healthy store. Just like a 90-day total isn't necessarily an indicator of whether or not you're actually being very profitable on eBay. There's so many other factors that go into place. But all things being equal, if I could have 10 high quality items versus 100 high quality items versus 1,000 high quality items, I'm going to take the 1,000 high quality items every day.
True. I just think in the secondary world, I don't know if there's many resellers that have 1,000 quality items, right? I would say for myself, out of my 3,000 items, maybe 1,000 are quality. Now, when I picked them up, I thought they were quality, you know, but I also picked up a lot of those things before I cared about sell-through rate. Right? Sell-through rate's a recent phenomenon. That's the buzzword of probably started back in like 2021.
Why don't you start another store then? I know we have various stores for like certain niches we don't want people to necessarily like catch on to necessarily, but why don't you do one? I know you have your reputation, so you already have the stars and you already have all the things you have top rated seller. But if you were to say like, hey, you have the ability and knowledge now to actually source better, keep the items you have currently, list your death pile junk items into your current store. And I say junk and I don't mean it's junk. I know you have items and each item is valuable, right? It's longer tail. So keep one store, your quote unquote, like, this is the stuff I've picked up. I know you've got tons of items you haven't listed yet, but then all the new things you're listing, try it in a new store that's not being weighed down with all that stuff. Yeah. You'd be top rated in a couple of months. You'd be good to go. And before long, you'd have a similar reputation if things are selling quickly.
Yeah, I'm just not in a place to experiment right now. I would say if the economy was doing well right now, I would definitely experiment.
If the economy was doing well right now, you wouldn't be worried about whether or not the sell-through rate was high enough and all of that stuff. Like, I think it's because the economy is not doing well that you might need to experiment.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying. I will think about it. I will think about it. So let us know in the comments on all of these. Do you think number one, Orlando is out of his mind? Do you relate with this? Because I know there are people that relate, because I have had so many conversations of individuals that started reselling in 2014, 2015, and the way to go was, you know, as long as an item sold, you should pick it up if it's good profit, build your store out as big as you can, and then things were good. And I think now we're seeing that obviously things have changed with eBay. All right, hey, before we move on, some of these conversations that I love having happen in our Discord. And so if you haven't had a chance yet to help us out via Patreon, we encourage you. All our content that we release is free. And one of the reasons we're able to do that is through people that support us from patreon.com/purezapodcast. Link below for $5.55 a month. And that gives you access to the Discord, which is a thriving community of resellers. And here's what I love, and I say this all the time, but I love that it has a mind of its own without Mike and I there sometimes. For this week, I was extremely busy trying to, you know, just tie up loose ends with my taxes, and I wasn't able to get on the Discord. And I hopped on today, and discussions that were being had were great. The bolos that were shared, hustles of the week that were being shared, tips, deals, everything was great. So if you haven't found a podcast to support, you should support us, patreon.com/purezapodcast. Also, you can find us on social media. We are Pure Hustle Podcast on all platforms except on X. On X, we are Pure Hustle Cast. You can always give us a call, 619-738-1170. That's 619-738-1170. Or shoot us an email at purehustlepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't subscribed yet, just jump on over, hit that subscribe button, and smash that bell notification, and click on that like button. And last of all, thank you for all the iTunes reviews. Letting people know why you love the podcast always helps us out in the algorithm. So if you haven't jumped on over, go to iTunes, and if you could leave us some positive feedback.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some great items that sold, though.
That's right.
Come on, hustlers. It's the freaking hustle of the week.
Yeah, hustle of the week. All right, our first one comes from Kalua. From our Discord. This guy is the man. He does some killer work and does some amazing reselling. Anyways, this one, he found a Dallas Cowboys hat for $2 at the swap meet. Nice. It's America's team. I'm learning that now that I'm in Texas. Oh, wow. Listed and sold a vintage Dallas Cowboys double shark tooth hat within 3 minutes for $140. After discussing on the Discord, realized it was worth closer to $500. Still a great ROI, though. Man, that's a tough one. It's always hard when it's like $2 to $140. You feel like just on top of the world. And then you realize you left money on the table. It's like, oh, no. But you can't give up on the fact that that is incredible ROI. From $2 to $140, that's amazing. Man.
So anybody that does it on the Discord, I always say, remember the lantern. Right, the lantern so my question is, if we create, which we are going to drop merch here soon, is it do your research with a lantern, or is it remember the lantern with a lantern, or is it neither of those? Let us know in the comments.
I don't know, Orlando. You come up with the cheesiest stuff, but maybe people love it.
No, well, hey, you know, that's the thing. I've just been thinking about this. I got some ideas I got to share with you. All right, no, but Kalua, you know, I wanted to share this because it's still an amazing hustle of the week. I mean, 3 minutes? I know when you heard the cha-ching, you were excited, and at the same time, there's dread. Like, what did I miss? But it's still an awesome. And then actually, somebody else, Secondhand Solo on the Discord, shared how they had a Chargers hat that he sold for $35 that was worth $600. So, you know, there's also, do we have a thread in there for us to mourn?
I mean, we have like a bad buys.
Not a bad vibes.
Yeah. Not a bad sells.
But thanks for sharing. All right. This next one comes from Vintage Mermaid, also from the Discord, a longtime listener of the podcast. I wanted to share this because I always love it when people message me and go like, oh, you'll never sell it for that price. And then it does. And for more. And you're like, haha. Like, I wish it was OK to just message those people back, but you can't. All right. So when she said, don't sleep on the granny. How do you say that when it's like junky Schlotsky?
Chotsky.
Chotsky's. Hey, don't sleep on Granny Chotsky's. This one I paid $5 in estate sale, mostly because I thought it was adorable. There was no brand. Got it home and turned out it's a Lufton. Sold in 24 hours for $285 with a repaired wing and a modification from the original owner.
Holy smokes.
I know. I've sold stuff that's broken too, and I even say that it's glued and people still buy. So that's pretty awesome. And also said, had a collector message her that the price was way too high and that she would only get $140, but obviously got double that. They obviously don't understand vintage Christmas sales during Q4. It took several days, but decided, to sell it all because she had a huge haul. And then she said, I remembered when I've heard Mike and Orlando, which I think it's more Mike that says this, would you ever pay him this amount for this? And the answer was no, but I'll be keeping a photo on my phone. Am I the only one that does that? You know what she's talking about when you tell people, like, you know, if people want to keep things, but you say, yeah, but if it's sold for that much, would you really pay that much for that item?
Yeah. Yep.
And if not, then you should just sell it.
Yep.
So
yes, absolutely. Like even the things you've got in your house right now, that you're like, oh, I might hang on to this, but it's like, you could sell that. Maybe you only paid $20 for it, but you could sell it for $300. So Orlando, would you pay $300 right now and go to the store and buy that? And if not, sell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's money in your pocket. That's basically what you're doing. You're buying it. It's the opportunity cost that you're buying.
That's true. Great job, Vintage Mermaid.
All right. Our next one comes from, Spitting Surfs.
Splitting Surfs.
Another one from our Discord. So picked up a camera at a yard sale at 7:03 a.m. Pays to be early for $2. Listed on eBay and sold a Canon PowerShot ELPH 360HS digital camera with the battery and charger and all that stuff for $2,900. Oh, gosh. Okay. Oh, God. I was like, wait a minute. Sorry, I don't think I remember seeing that on the Discord. Okay. Typo. So $299. $2 to $299 is still amazing. I got my heart like started beating like crazy when I saw almost $3,000. You're killing me, Orlando.
Sorry.
I'm a firm believer that you're sabotaging me with your.
Oh, I don't even know how
typos
is happening. Okay.
Well, all right, that's good.
Nice there. All right. Nice work splitting tariffs.
Very good. I don't really have anything big other than I had a random Poshmark sale come through, or a few, like a bundle sale.
Are you still on
and
there?
I was not. Yeah. And that's the thing is we're not really on there anymore. I mean, okay. Maybe we need to be. But again, it was like old stuff we bought from a long time ago that it was just super cheap, dirt cheap. And I love Poshmark sales because you really don't have to worry about shipping as much unless things have changed. I mean, I haven't been on there in a while, but shipping is pretty much already taken care of for you. You don't have to worry about how you're pricing it and all of that. And it just works out. You're not dealing with returns and possible negative feedback. And so I gladly take any Poshmark sale that randomly comes in. It's like getting a little bonus, you know. It's like when you like buy a good pair of jeans at a thrift store and you're like, oh, this is a great pair. I'm gonna be able to make good money on this. And you put your hand in the pocket and there's like a $5 bill in there too, and you're like, oh, sweet. Like this just paid for the that's kind of how a Poshmark sale feels to me. It's like, oh, cool, this sold. And on Poshmark, like, great.
That's how I feel about Bonanza. Whenever I get the PayPal notification, and I do miss PayPal. I used to be so anti-PayPal. But this, you know, at least with PayPal, when you get paid right away.
That's good.
Right. This whole eBay 2-day holdover thing, it just drives me mad. But yeah, you know, I have stuff on Poshmark. Yeah, I haven't had a Poshmark sale. The worst is when somebody sells on Poshmark that I already sold like a year ago. But remember, okay, so tip for everybody that cross posts. If you sell something on eBay and Poshmark at around the same time, cancel the Poshmark every single time.
Yeah, eBay is more important.
Yeah, there's no, and there's, I don't think there is even a penalty on Poshmark. Like on eBay, it'll definitely ding you if you have that out of stock sale and you can't fulfill it. So be aware. Okay, so I'm so glad when things work out. And I had mentioned a few weeks ago how I had no idea that the Goosebumps series was coming out on Disney. I had no idea. And a few weeks before that, I was at a garage sale. And I'll never forget, the night before, I was doing my research. And I saw that somebody had a box full of Goosebumps books. And I knew there was money in Goosebumps books. We've talked about it as a bolo. And I showed up to this garage sale at 9:30 in the morning. When I show up, why is it? I'm telling you, I don't believe we live in a matrix, but sometimes I feel like it. Because the one item I want to get, usually when I get to a garage sale, it's still there. But the right when I'm about to get it, somebody else is getting it. And it's like, why did it happen the moment I was there? Why couldn't it just disappear before I showed up? So I'm at this garage sale and this lady's looking at it. And then I start looking at it and she goes, oh, no, I'm thinking of buying this. I'm like, no. So I did the whole fake, like I'm looking at stuff next to her, you know, like I'm looking stuff up, like not real, but just on my phone. I'm pretending to, you know, that I'm still sourcing. So I was waiting for her to walk away. Well, eventually she starts, you know, haggling with the garage sale lady, the seller, and the seller wanted, I think she wanted, at first she wanted $10 for it all. And then she's like, yeah, you know what? That's for my son. That was my son's collection. I can't do less than 25. And the lady's like, 25? I'm not doing 25. And she walked away. I was like, yes. So I walked over and I said, hey, you know, what are you looking for these books? It seems like you have a lot of sentimental value to this. And she said, 25. I'm like, can we do 20? She's like, no, 25. And actually, I'm going to take this book right here. And she took one of the books out of the collection. Now, luckily, it was not one of the 62 books of the set. And so eventually, you know, she agreed and I paid $25. So out of the 25, I ended up getting the entire Goosebumps collection, books 1 through 62. Then I ended up getting another series, books 1 through 4, another series, books 1 through 6, whatever, and a couple other books. So I paid $25. I sold the series of 4 for $20 right away. I sold one of the other books for $20. So I'm already in the profit. And then that was in July. In August, when teachers are buying books for their elementary classrooms and so on, you know, and those are the best buyers because if they have a good budget, they're willing to pay up a little more because it's not their money. At least that's been my experience. And somebody had sent me $100 offer, $150. And then eventually somebody sent me a $300 offer. Now remember, I paid $25. So I was like, I could do $300. I only paid $25. And so I accepted the offer. And then after the fact, I can't stand it when people do this. Oh, hey, I was just wondering about the wear on some of the books. And I was like, well, it's in the pictures. Like to me, it's like you accept it. Just pay and get it delivered. Well, they never paid. So this is the one time eBay's biggest flaw worked out for me. So 4 days passed. They didn't pay. And I was on Instagram and I see Charm City Picker posting Goosebumps books. And I messaged him. I'm like, hey, I got these books over here. It's so awesome. You found those. Within a day, his sold for, I believe, $500. So I'm like, whoa, I almost let mine get away for $300. I'm going to up the price. So I upped the price and I did some obnoxious number, like $1,500 with 50% off. So it was at $750. And sure enough, within 2 days, instead of taking that $300 sale from the week before, I ended up selling the entire set for $600 plus shipping. So 25 to 600, I'll definitely take that. So keep an eye. It's still a bolo. Goosebumps is still hot out there. So keep an eye.
It's good stuff. I feel kind of dumb now. I got a new job. Obviously, I'm teaching at a new school in a new state. And my sister-in-law had given me a bunch of books because I moved to the middle school level. Okay. She'd given me a ton of books to put in my middle school classroom because she used to teach like upper elementary. So she had a ton. And I was leaving. And so I grabbed some books and she had a ton of Goosebumps books. And I didn't take them because I'm like, I'm not going to be teaching middle school again. I'm a high school teacher, kind of always been a high school teacher. I just had this little middle school stint for a little bit. And so I left them there. They were like not the school's books. They were my books that my sister-in-law gave me. So I'm like, dang, I wonder how much money I have.
Do you want me to take a trip over there?
No, it's all good, man. It's all good. Okay. I'll donate them to the school. The school is good to me. It's fine.
And by the way, you don't need the complete sets. I've sold 10 of the books for $70. So just keep an eye. It's also a bolo. So thank you, everyone, for sharing your hustle of the week. All right. So back to the lecture at hand. Do you still do this? I don't do this ever. I don't know if we talked about it in a video. I've shared this a lot on social. So sometimes you get those buyers that buy stuff. And then last second, they're like, whoa, that's the wrong address. Can you send it to this address? And the procedure used to be, in order to keep your seller protections, you had to cancel the sale, relist it. They had to make sure that they had the right address and rebuy from you. And it was super tedious. And I always hated it because, you know, you never know if you're going to get that sale again. Like they may, after, you know, canceling, they may change their mind and you lose it. I stopped doing that. Do you do that anymore? I'll just ship it out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the last time that's happened to me where I had a request. I mean, I'm sure it has happened. Can't you just have them like send an invoice to them with like the new address or no?
You know, I haven't even thought about that. I don't think you can, but it's possible. I don't know.
So you're saying you ship it out to the wrong address or you ship it out to the correct address?
No, I ship it out to the right. I don't want more. Now I have.
You're not worried about the seller protections.
There was one time this last year that I did ship it out to the wrong address still. But luckily they were kind about it and everything worked out. No, I don't think there's an issue with seller protections because it's in the messages.
Right.
Right. So
no, that makes sense.
I don't see how eBay is going to go, well, you shipped it out to the wrong address. And it's like, well, if you look at the messages, this is exactly where the buyer wanted me to send it.
Yeah.
So
it can make it a little harder with printing the label. You know, it's just extra steps.
No. Oh, yeah. Great question. So if that happens, I go to Pirate Ship and I create a single label on Pirate Ship. And then I get the tracking number and I just upload it on the item on eBay. That makes sense?
Yep.
So that's how you do it. Yeah, because on eBay, you can't modify the address on eBay when you're trying to ship. But if you have a Pirate Ship account, you can create your own single label. And you'll still get the same discount. That's the beauty about Pirate Ship is that you don't need to be a top-rated seller or anything to get their discount. It's there for you. So if you haven't checked out Pirate Ship, we're not sponsored by them. We'd love to. I would even wear an eye patch if Pirate Ship sponsored us, okay? So let us know, Pirate Ship, if you're listening to this podcast. Yar.
Okay.
Yar. I love it. Yeah, because if you don't know what we're talking about, just go to their chat and you'll understand exactly what we're talking about when we do the yars. All right. What about this? The most money is made in Q4.
I still think you're probably, again, it's going to be dependent and contingent upon what you're selling. So maybe some items will sell better in other times of the year. I do think Q4 is the number one shopping time of the year for most retailers. And I think that it makes the same for us as resellers. Now, all that being said, again, kind of going back to the idea of pipeline, if you aren't able to source enough inventory or be competitive enough, you might be running on slimmer margins in order to move things because competition, I feel like, ramps up. You need to be much more competitive. There are more buyers, but there's also, I think, a lot more people trying to sell things. Things are being listed a lot more. People are looking for newer items. So I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to hear what you have to say on this, because I would say I still think the most potential for profit is going to come in Q4. I think that's just what the numbers show. But what are your thoughts on this?
I think it depends on platform. You know, when I was killing it on Amazon, Q4 was it. Nothing comes close. Nothing comes close when you're doing Amazon on Q4. the last 2 years, I have not been doing Amazon Q4. And my biggest sales, and a lot of people say this, is usually January, February. And then for whatever reason, July, in the midst of summer slowdown, you know, things are quiet and then just explosion of sales. And I don't know why. I don't know why. Maybe it's because the inventory, like you said, it all depends on what you're selling. But I think it's not correct to tell people that sell on eBay, hey, Q4 is going to be incredible, because it might be better. There might be an uptick. I'm not going to say there's not going to be more sales, but it may not be your biggest month. And so, you know, some people like ramp it up during Q4. I think you should just ramp it up all year, because there's plenty here that sell clothing that will tell you a lot of clothing gets sold January, February, March. People get their tax refunds back. A lot of more people are buying pre-tax season. And so don't just, you know, focus on Q4. You should go strong year round, because you don't know when you're going to have that good month. My best month this year was in February. And in February, I had, I would say like 40% more sales than I've had in the last few months. So it was a good month. It was a good month.
It's good.
All right. Do you find this to be true, that you can sell anything on eBay?
No, there's certainly things you can't sell. I've learned that the hard way with Vero's and things being taken off, certain medical equipment and whatnot. But I think what you're getting at, though, is the idea that I think, if I'm being honest here, Alondo, in some ways, I think it's good. We're kind of considering how reselling has changed. But I think to understand this episode better, we got to understand that this is a little bit of mourning of the good old days of eBay, right? Like, those days are gone. And yeah, I think what you're saying with you can sell anything on eBay was, there was a time when you could pretty much just throw it at the wall and everything stuck and everything was selling and somebody was going to buy. And things are different now. And I do think you have to have a higher caliber of item. I think your items have to be what people are looking for, which has always been the case. But when people have a lot more expendable income, when even styles, like, I like to think about it like this, like the current housing style or interior decoration style. If you look on Instagram and you're seeing, like, my wife is really big into this. She's an interior designer, actually has a degree for it, not just like she calls herself one. So she's really big onto like what's in style. And if you look at like my parents and grandparents, specifically like that generation and in between there, they had tons and tons of stuff in their house, like knickknacks everywhere. Like, you know, when you walk into an estate sale, you can pretty much tell the age of the person by how many knickknacks, how many things. And a big part of that was things were finally being mass produced, and the stuff that only wealthy people could have in their house, like a picture or a porcelain, you know, figurine or carpet, right? Like, all of those things that used to be like only certain people could afford to have, now it was available to everyone. So people overdid it. And so, like, that was the style, was just to have all this stuff. And then now I think we've kind of tapped, like, gone down. So, like, more of a minimalist style. Minimalism was really big maybe 10 years ago. It was kind of took an uprise. But I think that's still kind of followed through. I think people prefer to have just fewer items and have certain things that they're looking for. Even the, I think the vintage push of, like, I want vintage shirts, right? I want a shirt from the 90s, like an actual band. That is kind of that push too. Like, I don't want mass produced stuff anymore. I want, like, kind of harder to get, unique things. And I don't need tons of it. And so I think that times have changed. So it's not just economy. There's tons of other things. And I think there was a time when people would just buy whatever because it was like decorate the house, have tons of collections, have tons of, and I think it's shifting. I think that's not quite in style anymore. And the economy may be part of that. And then also I think people are just kind of fed up with stuff, the consumerism and stuff. And so I think that cultural shift has a place to say with why you can't just sell anything on eBay either, because the total kind of milieu has changed, as it were.
Yeah, no, I think there's truth to that. Maybe that's why eBay is focusing on enthusiast buyers, right? Because those are the people that are still buying to consume, yep. Right? Yep. They want those things. Are you saying we should label this episode "The Good Old Days Are Gone"?
Something like that, yeah.
Something about like a tombstone that says RAP eBay. All right. No, and I think there's truth to that. Maybe this is therapy for me. I don't know, but I do think that time it has ended, and it's going to be even more difficult, I believe, in certain categories now with all the authenticity going on, which I think is a good thing. But, you know, we've mentioned before how eBay has purchased Certa logo, which is going to make sure that people aren't selling counterfeits of certain items. They've eliminated certain categories that they used to be able to sell on eBay. Things have definitely changed. So this is not the place where you can sell anything. And like we said previously on this episode, there's a lot more than just, you know, throwing everything at the wall and hoping it sells. You have to make sure it's a good sell-through rate. You have to make sure it's promoted. You have to make sure you have solid pictures, all those different things. All right. And then, before we move on to our last one here, American Bubble Boy, if you haven't checked them out, check them out. Joel has always been good to us. Mike, you should be having something come your way. So, I feel like I get all the goodies sent to me and I just get to thrive and everything here. But American Bubble Boy has awesome bubble wrap, free shipping. Next day, if you're in that area, 2 day, you can even do local pickup. Plus, they have my go-to tape, which is awesome. And so check them out, American Bubble Boy, in the link below. If you use our code, I believe it's Pure Hustle, you should look in the write-up. You get 5% off the free, the My Go-To Tape, which you might go saying, 5%? Yeah, 5%, because it's such a good deal. It's $35 for 24 rolls of tape. You should definitely check it out. All right, this last one. I don't think this is true anymore. You might disagree with me. I think you will. Anyone can resell.
Here's what I'd say about that. I do think I agree with you. I think that the kind of just the catchphrase sticks, that anyone can do this, because it is true that this is accessible to people, that it's very low entry. There's a very low cost to entry into reselling. However, I've learned just by reselling myself and we've talked about the changes in reselling. It's work. It's a lot of hard work. And I've discovered that a lot of people don't want to do it. A lot of people don't want to learn. A lot of people don't want to adapt. A lot of people don't want to put in the effort that it takes. And there was a time when it didn't take as much effort, like we've been talking about with all of the kind of good old days. And so sure, if it takes half the amount of effort and you potentially could be making just as much or more, then it was even more accessible to people. Even more people could just jump in and say like, hey, I'm going to go find some stuff to resell. Now that you have to be a little bit more picky, now that you have to know what you're doing and not just put up quantity of items, but the quality of items like we talked about, it's a harder thing to do. And so the barrier to entry is still low, but I just don't think many people are willing to do it. You know, I think a lot of people talk, but not a lot of people are willing to put in the work and effort that it takes. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's something to be said for the fact that the people who listen to our podcast regularly, the people who are consistently doing this, like it's not because they're doing something that's just easy that anybody can do. They're doing something hard. And I think that sometimes we can kind of almost take away from the fact that what they're doing and accomplishing, if you do say something like, oh, anybody could do this. Because I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't think that's the case. I think the people who are being successful reselling, like, that is an accomplishment. That is something that has taken effort and energy and know-how. And yeah, it's not just something that the average Joe is probably willing to do. Maybe they could, but I don't know if they're willing to.
Yeah, I remember saying anyone can resell. And I do think anyone can get started reselling. Whether you continue, that's the question. I've had good friends of mine. I remember in the early days of podcasts, sometimes they'd say, hey, Orlando, can I go garage selling with you on a Saturday? So, you know, we'd get in the car, we'd go sourcing, and they would get all hyped. And they would go for a month, 2 months, and then they would message me. It's like, hey, do you want to just buy all my stuff? Like, I'm kind of done. And I'm not saying they're any less of a person. It's just, I think it has to be something you enjoy, right? You have to be willing to source. And this is why in the other episode, this last one we did, I was very big on, if I keep having to source things I don't care to sell, like, I'm out of reselling. And I think a lot of people, if I'm that strong about it, and I've been reselling for 10 years, I can only imagine the brand new person, you know, having a difficult time going garage sale after garage sale, going to thrift store after thrift store, and then going, Yeah, you know, I only like selling video games. I only like selling vintage toys. I only like selling this. They're going to burn out pretty quick, right? Because, you know, in reselling, you sometimes you do need to do things you don't want to do. And I think that's the one part I was missing in the last podcast and sharing was that, yeah, I do sell things I don't care for sometimes. And it's because I have to sometimes. You know, I see something profitable and I'll pick it up and I'll sell it. Not really anything I care. For example, last year I had this huge, it was like a vintage camera projector. I don't know what it was, but it weighed like 100 pounds. It was the worst thing I've ever packed. It took me 4 hours to pack. I sold it for $300 something. I could have given up reselling that day. It was the worst. I never had such a terrible experience packing. It just was terrible. But, you know, imagine if a new person picked that up, didn't know how to, you know, ship out large items and their ordeal, that might just end them right there with reselling. They're done. So I don't think it's for everyone, but I do think anyone has an opportunity to take it on, to do it, to be successful if they want. But it does take some work. So hopefully this episode got you to see a lot of things that you've been holding on to, and maybe it's been holding you back as a seller, or maybe you're just like, you know, I don't agree with you guys, but I still appreciate that you produce an episode. With that being said, make sure to be real,
be relevant,
and be reselling. Lates. Peace.